Franklin to Kent Biz Connect, the show that connects businesses in Kent to do business. Tweet us live at Kent_biz.
Good afternoon. It's Tuesday, the 20th. Sorry, it's Monday, the 20th of January. Wishful thinking.
Blue Monday.
And welcome to Kent Biz Connect, the bi-weekly radio show for businesses in Kent, with myself, Martin White, and my fabulous co-host,
Tracy Westall.
Tracy, welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Lovely to have you with us, as always. We've got two fabulous guests with us today as well. To my right, we have
Jackie Offen.
Jackie, welcome. And to your right,
hi, it's James Stockdale from Fruit Geek.
James, fabulous. Not to be confused with your James, of course, Jackie.
Don't call him my James.
Jackie's business partner is also called James. So, yeah. But thank you for joining us. We've got a packed show, of course, as always. We're going to kick off with some business news in our county in a minute. We're also going to talk in depth to Jackie and James about their respective businesses as well. And we'd also like to hear from you. If you're on the Twitter and you'd like a shout out for your business, or you have a perhaps you have a question for our guest today, you can always tweet us at Kent_biz. Isn't that right, Tracy?
Yes, please do. I mean, obviously, this is a show for everybody, so get involved.
Yeah, do, by all means. But we'll kick off, I think, with some very topical business news. Tracy, what have you got for us? There's loads happening, as always.
There is. And do you know, I really quite liked an article that's on Kent Online, which, I can get this mouse working. It's about small businesses across Kent and the Go Plastic Free thing that they want to try and achieve. Moreover, on what the larger businesses are doing, the likes of Sainsbury's, Morrisons and Tesco's. And I remember that a long time ago, there were a few shops propping up in some local towns where you used to take your own pots and then fill them up with stuff that you wanted, and you got it weighed, and then you just went home with it. And there's a lot more of these shops now.
What sort of stuff?
Well, the things like
pick
muesli
and mix, you mean?
Yeah, but it was like pick and mix and lots of different things like nuts. You could do it with like vegetables and things like that, but like muesli and, and all of this. And I remember that there was a garden centre in Maidstone that had a company that was just full of freezers, and all the frozen stuff was loose that you could put in paper bags and things and then take them home and put them in the freezer. So, you know, you just bought the weight that you were requiring. But it was really interesting to see that a lot of the independent businesses in Kent are really taking a big passionate stance on this recycle, plastic-free thing. And also the fact that obviously a lot of the eco-friendly food packaging is more expensive to actually create than the polystyrene stuff and the plastic stuff. So, you know, that's definitely a big problem when you're looking on the financial side of trying to be eco-friendly and zero waste. But obviously, you know, a lot more people are getting on board about this, because a lot more people are thinking, well, I'm really fed up of having single-use plastic, especially from supermarkets. Sometimes they package things up in big bulk packaging, so some of the stuff that you buy, like fruit and veg, might go off before you've used it, or because you've got a big like packet of carrots or something. And I just think that things like disposable plastic cups and stuff, you need to be able to be more conscious about what you're using. And I've been really into recycling for a long, long time. And my biggest gripe is that there's stuff that I really like to eat, for instance, that comes in packaging that isn't all recyclable. And so I am in the quandary of, do I buy it or not?
I mean, the amount of is it called cellophane? Cellophane, sort of plastic wrapping that's on stuff is incredible, isn't it? And that, none of that is recyclable, I don't think. So if you're buying a pizza, anything that's shrink wrap basically as a kind of a food product, that packaging isn't recyclable, is it? I believe
And even if the packaging is recyclable, if it's plastic or whatever, it's still got to go somewhere and be recycled. And there's a certain amount of energy. A lot of energy has to actually go into that. I read an article this morning about Malaysia have sent a whole load of containers of recyclable plastic back to richer countries, the UK being one of them, because recycling has been pushed heavily in first world countries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, we haven't been able to deal with it ourselves. So we've packaged it up and sent it out to the likes of China and other places in Southeast Asia. And they're now starting to push back and say, we don't want your waste.
No, you're absolutely right.
So we need to go a lot. We need to find a more sustainable way to package things. Mm-hmm. The packaging needs to be biodegradable. And I think that's we've got to get to that point.
Yeah.
Plastic and recycling. It's great to feel virtuous about putting your plastic in the right recycling bin. But the bigger picture is that is still a problem in of itself.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And the thing is, it's about what are you going to do with this stuff and how are you going to be able to cut that waste? But also it is about reusable stuff. Can you, you know, upcycle, reuse any of this stuff and how are you going to do it? And the one thing that really intrigues me is that I did read an article last week about some African country that was now recycling a lot of their plastic for the roads. Now, obviously, I don't understand the technicality or whether or not it's going to melt in the heat and all of that kind of stuff. But I know that some of the European countries do that now. And I look at all these potholes, even coming down the M20 today, since we've had all that Operation Brock and all these people digging up the road and everything, the amount of potholes down that stretch of the M20 from Maidstone to Ashford is horrendous. And I'm just thinking, this is not sustainable. Is this plastic alternative a more sustainable product for us to use on our roads, and that the you know it's going to be cost saving in the long run?
It's fascinating, isn't it? It's such a big discussion topic, I think it's the biggest single issue, you know, facing the human race ever. I think it's fair to say, isn't it? I mean, you know, Cuban Missile Crisis, Cold War, okay, you know, pretty important stuff could have wiped us all out. But equally,
we're killing ourselves through doing this. We're destroying our world. And I think that's terrible. And one of the big things that they say, that like Sainsbury's and Tesco's and Morrison's are the big sort of like suppliers of food in the food chain. But the thing is like Sainsbury's and Morrison's have pledged their own brand disposable plastic by 2025, which isn't that long away, 5 years. And Tesco's are committed to removing 1 billion pieces of plastic by the end of 2020. Now, it's going to be really interesting to see how they do that and whether or not they do hit those targets. But I also think that, you know, congratulations to all them small businesses have become more ethical and more worried about the place they live, the world they live in, and are really pushing this. And I think a lot of people love to go to a greengrocer's and pick their fruit. You know, if you want 6 apples, you can actually go and pick 6 apples yourself, not get a plastic bag with 6 of them in that somebody else has chosen for you.
And it's more local as well. It's that kind of idea of shopping local and maybe buying
carbon offsetting.
Yeah, local seasonal products. I mean, carbon offset is kind of, I mean, there's a whole movement today, I think, isn't there? That, you know, there's momentum that's building, I think, and you know, the government is going to have to work out, I think, fairly quickly what its role in all of this is. It's all very well to say, you know, we are going to be carbon neutral as a country by 2050, which I think, you know, Theresa May, that was her parting gift to Boris Johnson. And, of course, you know, all the councils and local authorities are having to kind of fall in line with that, like KCC, for example, have come out and, you know, they've got no choice. They've had to say, we will be carbon neutral in Kent by 2050, you know, as a county.
Yeah.
But what they've now got to do is kind of step up and help make that a reality, because the reality at the moment is there's very little choice. It's very expensive to go green.
Yeah.
You know, there is some fabulous new emerging technology out there, but we need to harness it and we need to make that affordable in a kind of mass market context, don't we?
Oh, definitely. And I think that when you're talking about the big, larger companies that got shareholders that they need to take care of on a financial basis, it's the fact that they've got to make more money for their shareholders, not necessarily what they're going to be doing to be, you know, more ecological, more economical on their plastic and things like that. It's about making as much money as they possibly can for the shareholders. But what is really ironic is those shareholders also live on our planet.
Right.
And I'm sure a lot of them do have some concerns about the way we're destroying it.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a really good case in point. You look at an organisation like Vattenfall, and, you know, everybody knows Vattenfall are, you know, the wind energy people. Mm. You know, the wind farms that we see in Kent, for example, off our coast are Vattenfall product at the end of the day. You know, that's what they make.
Yeah.
But they're a state-owned company. You know, Vattenfall is actually owned by the Swedish government. So, you know, that's flipping the whole thing on its head completely, isn't it? And saying, actually, you know, we as a society, we as a country, believe that, you know, we should put people before profit.
Exactly,
in that instance. But, you know, the problem you're going to have is how you then translate, you know, wind farm energy, for example, and the cost, the huge cost associated with creating wind farms into an affordable product that I can have in my home as a consumer. And, you know, I think realistically the only way we're going to be carbon neutral is, you know, nobody's going to have a gas boiler in their house anymore. You know, those days are gone. You know, any existing housing stock, any new housing stock will have to have some kind of district heating biomass plant sitting there behind that, pumping hot water into homes on a mass market kind of scale. But who's going to pay for that? You know, if you say to someone that means that your utility bills are going to go up by 150 quid a year, you know, that isn't an affordable option for most people, is it? You know, how can they be expected to pay for that?
As an interesting interjection, not that I wish to jump over this, but I believe Apple as a business globally now run 100% on renewable and sustainable energy. And I know in some places they actually give a fair amount of energy that they don't use back to the local grid. And I think for a business of that size, setting that sort of example, it must show that the technology and the will, if it's there, it can be achieved. But it all comes back to what you say. Yeah. On a consumer level, what is the cost involved? It's all very well for Apple to say, oh, we use 100% renewable energy. That's because they're one of the richest companies in the world, and they can afford to put it in. There's not really a problem.
Well, and they're selling a premium product. Exactly, you know, they're selling a laptop that costs £1,000.
Yeah.
You know, so that could be.
Lots of people sell laptops for £1,000, Martin.
No, but that's the market that they're in. You know, it isn't a mass market in that respect, is it? You know, it's not it's a different brand, and therefore they can probably build that into their pricing
easily. I think it would be really interesting that all these shareholders from these major companies, especially these supermarkets, I'd be really interested to actually know their own human viewpoint on this. Mm. Do they just want Sainsbury's and Morrison's and Tesco's, whoever they've got shares in, to just go ahead and just forget about all this, you know, waste of plastic, etc., just to get the extra money in because it's cheaper? Or would they be more than happy to forego a bit of the profit distribution to make sure that the person or the company that they've invested in is actually carbon neutral or is going to positively head in that direction? Because I'm sure that a lot of them would actually forego some of their profit share on their share as a shareholder to make that happen. But, you know, whether or not you can actually get to discuss that with any of them, you know, that's for the main company to start, you know, interjecting with their shareholders and say, look, this is our plan. How much of this are you prepared to forego in your dividends going forward for us to be able to do this?
Well, there are now, you know, there are investment funds out there now that are 100% ecologically and environmentally focused, aren't they? So you can, you know, we are starting as consumers to be able to make those kinds of decisions. And as I said, there does seem to be a kind of a momentum and a kind of a head of steam building, but there needs to be far more choice. It has to be affordable for it to be mass market. And we're just not there yet. There isn't enough of a drive, I don't think, to enable us to kind of hit these what are going to be massively stretching targets for us. I mean, Jackie, you're a great example. You run a...
I've been very quiet listening to all of you. I don't know how you can draw me in like that, Martin. No, you're trying. Well,
because,
well done.
You know, you run a fleet. I mean, not all of your vehicles at J&J Systems are electric, but some of them are. So you've kind of
nearly
started
half now. We're moving over to electric cars.
Yeah, so you've kind
and
of
they're
started
not Teslas,
that.
Just to put it out there. we can't go that far. They're just Renault Zoes. They're very, very cheap and economical to run.
Mm. So what was behind your decision to, I mean, have you got one eye on the environment, or did it make sense from a business point of view?
The other 50% of the business is very extreme about saving polar bears. And right. I say that flippantly because of the company I'm in, but James is a real advocate for it. Right. No matter almost what the cost, we'll do our best to put an environmental element into it. So we researched it. He researched it. I say we. And we've moved over to cars. Mm-hmm. We can't move over completely because vans, as I was saying to James earlier, van batteries aren't quite so good yet. They don't have the same mileage available to them. Mm-hmm. But the Renault Zoes are very good. They're economical to buy, including the battery, and they've run very well. They're right. great yeah. to brand, mm-hmm. cover and wrap. Hang on, that's not very environmental.
cover them in plastic.
But it keeps them nice and clean so yeah. that they have an extra long life. Yeah. And we're from that point of view, the cars are very good. Mm-hmm. Mm. The solar panels on the roof go with that. So we have the charging points. We have the solar panels on the roof as well, available from a grant through Locase originally when that was out. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And... as well as that, we did quite a lot of other things as well. I was desperately trying to remember the other thing I was going to mention about saving the environment. And it's
recycling.
Well, recycling
is... just talking about manufacturers, we've noticed a big difference in HP. They were, which is really the brand that we sell, they were, everything was wrapped in polystyrene. Mm-hmm. And only this last sort of, I think it's been about 4 or 5 months, everything's now coming in recycled cardboard. So there's a big change coming from there because obviously packaging's a big deal that the machines come in.
Mm. Yeah. And I know that, I mean, we'll come to what you do, but, you know, I was really interested in the recycling computers as well because that's a big thing as well. Yeah. You know, you've got all these things. You know, I had a washing machine. I've had it not very long, really, when the whole scheme
of
things
years
about.
I normally last.
No, it was about 8 years, but you know, and then I just thought, well, you know, this whole unit has now got to go somewhere, and I've got to. They never make anything to last either, or to add bits on to make it better. Mm. You know, and I'm not just talking about technology, but everything.
Like, it's
a throwaway society. And I think that that's just so, so terrible. And I know that there's organisations out there that all club together, they all meet, and if you've got a broken radio or a Hoover or something like that you can transport, somebody will sit there and try and fix it for you. Mm. I went to Cuba a while back and they fix everything. They recycle everything because obviously, you know, back then, they didn't have a lot of money, but literally one of my hair dryers broke and I put it in the bin and the woman said, I'll take that home to my husband, he'll fix it for you. And he did.
There's a really nice guy in the community in Hawkinge that called something like, Fisk got Fix in his name, and he fixes all things like that. He'll take it and he'll fix it first.
Yeah.
But the IT side of things, we recycle with a partnership with Digital Pipeline in Aylesford. Mm. So anything that we take away from a client as being outdated, they're a Microsoft refurbishment centre, they'll refurbish it, goes out to Africa and it becomes a classroom or a piece of equipment right. out there for the, so businesses, at least it falls on our
So yeah, and my thought process going on with this is that it's usually not the product that falls behind it. Anything can be fixed and replaced. It's more and more the technology that's behind it that's driving the need to get the newer, the better, the smarter. So we're living in a world now where we've got the Internet of Things. So that's something that you're sort of familiar with, and how that everything within your life is going to be integrated into the home and your personal belongings. And you know, if you've got an 8-year-old washing machine that can't be used in that, it becomes redundant, not because the washing machine's not any good, but when the bearings go in it and that needs replacing, you go, well, I'll get a new one because a new one connects me to the internet and tells me that my washing's done when I'm at work.
Mm.
But also another thing.
Which is innovation, and that's what kind of drives
and
the
that's
market,
what drives
isn't it?
That's what drives it.
And going alongside that, it's I think it's WhatsApp on some phones. It's going to stop working because you cannot update that particular older phone to the newer updates. And that's driving the sales of the newer models of them particular phone companies. And I think that's terrible.
Well, Apple are a good example of that. You know, there's, you know, when they upgrade the processor or the, you know, the operating system, you know, quite often, you know, your old machine can't keep pace with that. You know?
So I saw a headline just the other week about something to do with this, about if you've got so-and-so iPhone, you won't be able to use WhatsApp. And then when I looked into it, it's only going to affect iPhone 4s, really, which haven't been around for about 10 years now or more. And so the reality is there's so few people using it by now. It's not as a big consideration. And when it comes to things like software, it's usually driven by security because the security moves on so fast. And things like WhatsApp, it's, you know, one of its main selling points is end-to-end encrypted and things like that. And so when it becomes incompatible with older software, it's just not economically viable for the companies to invest in such legacy software and hardware to make it available. So they, when it comes down to that level, you know, that's kind of part and parcel of that side of technology. But I think when it becomes to things that are much more of a mix of technology and more traditional appliances or machinery, such as cars or whatever, you know, that's where you really see the technology outdating things. And I think that manufacturers are maybe not making their things to last as long because they know that we could build a great washing machine that lasts 20 years, but an aspect of that isn't going to last because the technology will be so outdated in 10 years.
And it's so hard to second guess that, isn't it? I mean, you take take washing machine manufacturers, for example. You know, I mean, you might say, okay, we need to build a stronger heating element that isn't going to fail, you know, in our washing machines. And then you get someone like Persil come out and say, well, we've now created a washing powder that will wash your clothes at 10 degrees. So you don't actually even need a heating element in a washing machine anymore because room temperature water is more than adequate to clean your clothes. And, you know, it's kind of everybody's driving innovation continually because that's the kind of a key selling point for any brand or product. But
I think that in the last sort of two generations, the amount of changes, especially with computer technology, has just been astounding. I mean, how long ago was it when the first mobile phone actually had internet access? Not very long ago.
Smartphones.
But I remember my first phone was a Nokia, looked like something out of Star Trek.
And a communicator.
Beam me up, Scotty.
Mine was a hand brick.
Car phone warehouse.
I mean, I did use it for a fancy dress, funnily enough, but that's another story. But, you know, it was a phone. It didn't have any text messaging on it. You just dialed, and we had things called pagers, you know, which came up with a message.
Oh, gosh, a pager. No, exactly. That is going back.
And, I mean, that's not...
Ring
if
this
you look
number.
About, if you
we're
look,
not that old, are we,
We're not that old.
Not really,
we're not that old. But, you know, I just remember people having them. But, you know, and if you look back, which was not very long ago...
No, last week.
At all, you know, to now, where what's on your phone is far more, advanced than... The first computers. I mean, the amount of data you can hold on a phone these days.
Yes.
The pictures you can take, the size
screen
of the
screen.
Exactly.
Sizes, yeah.
All
but
of these
things. But I think
things.
The key thing, I mean, you know, coming back to what you were saying, it shouldn't be a case of innovation for innovation's sake anymore so that we can sell more product every year. There has to be innovation that's actually sustainable and has a higher purpose, I would suggest, because ultimately we can't keep producing the amount of stuff that we... I watched a programme about the VW car plant in Wolfsburg. It was a new Richard Hammond series that I caught a bit of the other day. It was, you know, it was a Gigantic World or something it was called. And, you know, this plant is turning out, you know, tens of thousands of cars a day. You know, and so, you know, that's a great example, isn't it? Why are we continuing to be obsessed with putting more and more vehicles on the roads when we know that that isn't a sustainable solution?
Yeah.
Well, it's partly because the older cars churn out more pollution. And although it takes, it's a real, for some people, it's a really contentious issue because they say, well, by keeping an older car on the road, you're avoiding the carbon that has to go into build a new car, which is worth about 3 years on the road for most ordinary cars. But because that carbon that is put into building a new car is done on such a scale, such as at a VW, I think that figure is very hard to articulate or even agree exists. Because no one really knows, do they?
But then, you know, you say, OK, it's very easy to point the finger at that, but, you know, that car plant in Wolfsburg employs 67,000 people.
Yeah, it's
that's 67,000 jobs. So, you know, so what if they're churning out 17,000 cars a day? The fact is they're employing a small town on one site. And that's, you know, so that's people's livelihoods. So, you know, these aren't easy kind of questions to kind of answer,
they're
are
not.
They?
But, I mean, going back to the beginning of this one topic, we've just spent half an hour talking about one topic, but you know, hats off to local businesses that have really taken up, you know, the baton for this.
Absolutely,
and you know, and it's a shame that these larger companies are not taking it on board on the same serious level as SMEs and small businesses that want to do this. Because obviously, if they did get on board and started working with the smaller businesses, then obviously, you know, the quantity of the goods that they need to be able to have recycling packaging, that price will go down.
Absolutely.
Because it has to.
And I think, you know, as individuals, we're all, I'm sure, much more acutely aware of having to do our bit. And that ultimately will pay dividends as well. I mean, when I play golf on a Saturday and I walk around my golf course, the number of people who seem to think that having drunk a, you know, a bottle of energy drink, they can just dispose of the plastic bottle on the golf course is mind-boggling. So whenever I see a piece of, I make it a point now, whenever I play golf on a Saturday, to pick up a piece of plastic. And if everybody walked around every single day picking up one piece of plastic, we'd be in a lot better place, wouldn't we?
Yes, get on the subject of litter and fly tipping and all the other things which human beings do to our countryside, Martin.
Anyway, we need to leave it there.
Yeah, we'll leave it there. We'll leave it there.
We hadn't intended to rant on for half an hour about, you know, the planet.
It's an important subject, Martin.
Isn't it?
It's worth time well spent.
And it's becoming, thanks, James, and it's becoming a really emotive subject. And I, you know, I for one, as a sort of a, historically, a sort of a consumer of excess, shall we say.
Monster munch.
And much more aware of my individual responsibility. So, that's fantastic. Thanks, guys. We're going to play a bit of music now, I think, by way of an introduction to you. You've already heard from her, but we're going to hear a lot more from Jackie at J&J Systems.
What have you got today?
Well, we've got a bit of very tenuous music again. By way of an intro. But we will see you on the other side of this.
You're listening to Kent Biz Connect. Tweet us live at Kent_biz. Shaking, the room is a groove and the floor is almost earthquaking.
Welcome back, everybody. Some of you may have been able to deduce the link there. Tracy's smiling at me. Cause
let's just say it had nothing to do with me because I got in the station a little bit late to offer my suggestions.
Well, that was a lovely, catchy little number, I thought, called Back It Up by Caro Emerald.
Never heard of her.
And on that note, over to you, Jackie at J&J Systems. Welcome to the show. I'm sorry, I couldn't find anything more appropriate. There was a Kraftwerk song out there, not Autobahn, one of their other ones, Computer Something or Other. But I think we've played that one before. But Jackie Offen, J&J Systems, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Martin.
Lovely to have you in the studio. You have been in this studio before, but some time ago, I think.
Yeah, with Mr. Andrews.
With Paul, yeah. So it's lovely to have you on Kent Biz Connect. Tell us a little bit about the history of J&J Systems, because you guys have been around for a while now, haven't you? It's fair to say.
You're making me sound old.
Well, and you started young.
Yeah, something like that. We're 22 years this year that we've been in this, and James and I worked together previously as well in another business. Not this James sitting on my right, no. The other James.
The other
Dark Lord that never comes out of the building. He's not allowed to speak to clients.
So 22 years in business.
Yes.
This year.
Something like that.
And what exactly, I mean, when you started the business, yeah, what did you go into business to do and offer?
Have a bit of a laugh, really, it was right. To start with, 22 mm-hmm. years ago, have fun. Mm-hmm. And we said we'd only work with people we like, clients, staff. And back then, it was in the old days, you'd call yourself a dealer, I think, a computer dealer.
Mm, you were dealers.
Oh. Yeah, sounds a bit dodgy there. But
does today.
In those...
Were you operating
back
across...
Back in the day.
Were you operating across county lines or were you just Kent folk?
So bad, Martin. Such a rubbish joke.
Why is he asking? That's what you
got. Yeah, I know. Come on. Oh, dear. Back then, we did accounting software. That was the primary core of the business. I used to consult and install accounting software.
So that was what, Sage?
No, Pegasus.
Oh,
it was.
Pegasus, of course.
Our friends at Oasis, they now look after all of our clients out of the Pegasus products.
Is that how you got to know Bruce at Oasis, through that back then? Or?
Oh, I fell in love with Mike. Do you not know this?
No.
I'm joking.
Okay.
No, I am joking. You got to know Mike Tucker, who's one of Bruce's partners. Mm-hmm. All the Pegasus do's, and they're only based in Ashford. So when we stopped doing it, they took all our clients over and help us, and we work together. It's really good, a really good partnership. But that's what the business was focused on.
So and, specialist accounting software solutions.
And the networking and everything was kind of a bit, it was the smaller part of the business, and it was dealt with by James. And then over the course of years, it kind of completely flipped on its head, and now we focus entirely on looking after people's networks, security, all Microsoft-based products. We don't touch Macs. We leave that to the specialist Apple people.
Leave that to James. The other
leave
James.
That to the specialist
the
Mac
other James.
People.
The fruit geek.
The fruit geeks of this world. So small businesses across Kent and the South East, and actually up as far as Hertfordshire as well. Down to East Sussex.
So there's some sort of industry terminology, isn't there, for what you do? Is it managed service provider? Is that the
Look
kind
at
of,
you, you've been reading our website. www.jjsystems.co.uk.
Is that the kind of the official title?
Yeah, a managed service provider.
Yeah. Because for me that always seems so sort of bland and sort of, you know...
Thanks very much.
Boring and... Because, well, the reason I say that is because I know you're not like that, either individually or as a business, because you're very much about your client's business, aren't you? You're not just kind of, you know, charging someone 20 quid, you know, for having remote access to a terminal, taking the money, thank you very much, and then you won't see us again. You're much more proactive than that as a business.
I once said that to a client, and they said, they all say that. Mm. But it's very true. We walk into businesses and we take them over. We like to go in, learn about them, understand them, offer them advice on all their services and take as many of those services on board as we can. from the network security, the broadband, lease lines, VoIP communications, literally every part of their IT and communications. So they're not having multiple service providers. Mm. They only have one. They ring the support desk and our support desk can handle everything from beginning to end. That said, if we work with other providers, then we'll do that hand in hand as well. So we're quite happy to do that. So we might have, for example, different software providers that we can't take over that business, like in solicitors, they have very special dictation software or accounting products and practice management, and we deal with those people as well. So we kind of try to do everything and then be very proactive about the service. So that will mean, and other people say this, but we actually do it, we'll actually update their servers. We just recently took a client on and they've been with a competitor of ours, not particularly local, and their server hadn't had any updates for 2 years.
Wow.
So, and yet he said, well, why am I paying you more? Well, that's why, because your previous...
they weren't doing any work?
They were doing nothing. They just
but they were still charging
you. Yeah, as an insurance policy. You know, we're not an insurance policy. We'll actually go in. Our engineers go to site. We've got a site quite new to us, and I've got two engineers a week there every week, and they're actually managing all of their PCs. They're working out what's there, what needs to be upgraded, what needs to be changed, looking at the infrastructure, working out how it all goes fits together, and their previous provider had been there for 2 or 3 years and they'd done nothing.
So do you, in many instances, do you do away with the need for a business to have their own dedicated internal IT support, or is that always, are they the kind of the key link for you in terms of how you work with businesses?
Most very small businesses can't afford that because it's an entire salary. Usually what happens is there's somebody in the business who vaguely knows how to turn a printer on and off and might have a bit of an interest in IT, and they dabble a bit, and or you'll find the MD under a desk. And he, if you work out his hourly rate, the guy shouldn't be under the floor plugging things in. He should be doing his job. So we like to go in and do it properly, if you like. But obviously there's a fee associated to that.
Right. But if ultimately I'm able to kind of... you know, save on a full-time employee, you know, for argument's sake, all in £50,000 a year.
Oh, yeah, I've got £50,000, Martin. Oh, yeah, I'd have you straight away.
But... No, I mean, all in. you know, that's got to be a sensible kind of commercial business decision to take, isn't it?
Generally speaking, the our largest client that we've got has got something like 80 seats on their network, something like that. And generally, once you get up to sort of 100 seats, they might want their own IT person. You do you suffer the problem of having an IT person who wants a holiday and who finishes at five and all of those problems. And you've only got one set of knowledge. So that one person can only know so much. So he might understand their network, but he may not know about emerging technology or understand what's commercially viable.
So you're very much a business partner for the business, working in the business, albeit some of the time remotely, some of the time on site. But the key thing is, you know, you have a vested interest in making sure that the business is successful as well, don't you? Because ultimately...
Well, definitely. I just spoke to a client this morning, actually, before I came out, and he moved away from a similar business to ours, slightly smaller probably, who he'd been with for 2 or 3 years, and he said that using us was a life-changing decision for them as a business, and that they can now grow their business, and they are. They're adding users on a regular basis to their network, which means the business is succeeding. He said he spends so little time now worrying about his IT and dealing with it. That was enough for me to feel like we're doing the right thing.
Because, the recent... headache sort of Windows 7 coming to the end of its life sort of springs to mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of us out
there... Martin, you got it, didn't you? You got the message.
Some of us have just had a message alerting us to the fact that our software is no longer being supported.
You're not alone.
But, you know, that for a business to kind of have to manage that internally would be quite a kind of stretch, wouldn't it, for many businesses? I mean, when do you take the computers down? You know, when do you kind of go offline to do that work? Because, as you say, nobody wants to be there at midnight doing that, you know. that work, uploading new software. And so, you know, that in itself is a great example of the value that you add.
We've been talking to clients for 2 years about replacing IT and making sure, obviously, we refurbish those and we pass them on to Digital Pipeline, like I said earlier. But for replacing equipment and making sure that all their machines are up to date, and ensuring really that their whole systems are manageable moving forwards, and that the staff have some productivity, because it would be great always to update the oldest machines, but it doesn't mean the staff are productive then, because if you have to sit and wait for Windows 10 to do its thing every now and again, you might, your people aren't working, and nobody wants their staff to not be working effectively. So, yeah, we've been planning for that. That doesn't mean to say every business is able to afford to replace equipment or refurbish it or do those things.
Because there's a lot of talk, isn't there, about older machines again. I mean, we spoke about, you know, redundant technology. Older machines not being able to run 10 as quickly, as efficiently as newer machines. Has that been a problem as well?
Yeah, so the older machines they don't all enjoy working on Windows 10. Obviously, you do your best to... We have a workshop that installs machines to optimise them and make sure that you take away all the things that perhaps interrupt a user's day and try and make sure they're optimised for business use. But the older machines aren't quite so efficient. Windows 10's a little more resource hungry than good old reliable Windows 7 that we all loved.
And the kind of the trendy thing at the moment, James, you kind of know about this as well, is the kind of the move to solid state drives, isn't it?
That's kind of our bread and butter work at the moment for a lot of people. You know, whether it's a Mac or a PC, it's just been found that the old traditional mechanical drives just don't seem to like newer operating systems and Office 365.
We haven't sold a spinning drive for about 4 years now. We've only ever put SSDs in for the last 4 years.
Discs?
Five and a quarter inch.
What do you mean, do I remember them?
His entire life's
still
on them.
Still use them. Still got lots
Not
of...
Not store much on that, Martin.
Lots of data on my floppies.
Start of day disc. Do you still have one of those? Do you remember those days?
Yeah.
Start of day disc on your Amstrad.
Just saying.
It's been a busy time for you then, I assume. Because people always leave it to the last minute as well, don't they? It's kind of, oh, it's coming. And then it's
we had a few calls. We did have a few calls. I know you told us that. Well, there is a way out for businesses that won't perhaps have legacy equipment as well, because there's some things like CNC machines and equipment that can't get rid of the legacy products. So there is an extended license available for Windows 7. It will be available for the next 3 years, but you can only purchase it year on year. So the current extended life product for 1 year is about £58 per device.
Wow.
And it has to be bought specifically. But it means if you've got a legacy piece of software or a piece of equipment that's connected to it, you can at least get security updates for one more year. And as James said earlier, really the key about this is not specifically that the software's going to stop running, because it'll keep running, but it's about maintaining security, because the biggest drive in our industry now is about keeping systems secure. We spend more time worrying about threats than anything else, because they are real.
And that is another side to your business, isn't it, in terms of training and staff training and cybersecurity. You're always running cybersecurity workshops. And I guess ultimately it boils down to staff. Staff are the single weakest link, aren't they?
100%.
In the chain there, because, you know, you go into work, you get a kind of a fairly sort of innocuous looking email, spam email come through. It may not have found its way into the junk folder, and you click on it,
and then speak for yourself.
And before you know it,
before you know it, you've got all sorts of things on your screen.
What you thought was an innocent email about Bitcoin or whatever it happens to be has now impregnated your computer with some malicious software that's kind of monitoring keystrokes and giving you a kind of a fake homepage. And accessing all of your passwords and everything else, and they're in, and you don't even know. It doesn't crash your machine necessarily. It starts working in the background, and that's the frightening thing, isn't it?
It is indeed. So a lot of our all of our clients with our contracts all do get free staff training for the for their members of their staff for cyber awareness and productivity. And it does mean that you had a level of protection, and it means as well that you can work towards a government certificate called Cyber Essentials, which we help our clients achieve. So it proves to their suppliers, their supply chain and their own clients that they're actually taking security seriously. And you and I have had lots of conversations in the past about GDPR, Martin, so we won't open that can of worms. But it helps to make sure that they show that they're taking data security seriously.
Yeah, fantastic. And all of that is all part of the service.
It's all included
that you provide
in our premium contracts.
So again, it's something that I, as a business owner, can budget for quite easily, because I know that I've got 20 people working in my business. 15 of those have direct access to a computer on a daily basis.
Absolutely.
And therefore, it's going to cost me X pounds a month.
Exactly that.
And then I've got that total peace of mind, knowing that I'm 100% covered for all
eventualities. I need you to write my marketing material, don't I, at this rate?
He's good.
He's good, isn't he?
But it's true, though, isn't it? I mean, it's you know, you just kind of, you can see the kind of the benefit and the value in that.
Well, for us, the biggest aspect is taking it all on, including the backups. You mentioned it, back it up.
Yes.
But making sure that machines are backed up, whether it's a one-man band with a laptop who's just got some data on it, or whether it's someone with a server, we monitor all of our backups. It's, we don't just rely on a piece of software to tell us. We actually have an engineer look at the backups and make sure they're complete and make sure that there's no problems at all, and because we're the ones that would be held responsible if anything went wrong. So we have actually three levels of backup for servers. So we don't just do it once, we do it three times with different types of backup as well. These days, data's grown so large. James, I know data's grown so massive. You must have issues with your eye stuff, where people take photographs and it just balloons. Data becomes massive, and backing that up is also then an issue for a business. Knowing where it is, you need to know where your data is for GDPR, and we joke about it, but you can't just rely on it being stored on a cloud, in a random cloud that you don't know where it is, or a user's own device. You've got to know where it is. You've got to be able to delete it. You've got to be able to manage it.
You've got to have control.
You've got to have control. So it's really important.
We could talk all day about this because I am someone that, that still lives in the dark ages when it comes to technology.
You need to go and see
and I've learned a few times. I've learned a lot just in 20 minutes, some of which has alarmed me. but there is another side to Jackie Offen.
Oh, there's many sides to me, but we'll talk about the other one.
And that is very much about dementia.
It's true.
And dementia awareness and all of the brilliant work that you do on a kind of fundraising level. So tell us about that. How did that come about? Why? And
well, if I tell you how it came about, I'll cry.
Okay.
So I'll try not to cry too much, but I did want to talk to you about, I run a biannual charity ball. It's at the Cathedral Lodge in Canterbury. And, it's only every other year, because otherwise it's incredibly stressful organising it. And that's all the funds go to the Alzheimer's Society. And that's because I didn't want to run a marathon or jump out of a plane, because I'm not that active. But I wanted to try and make a difference. So for the 4 years, so twice we've run this ball in the past, and each time it's raised over £7,000 for the Alzheimer's Society. And this year is the third one. Being 2020, and I'm about to release the tickets. They're tables of 10 and all the normal things you'd expect from a nice glitzy event where ladies turn up in long ball dresses and generally gentlemen treat them nicely, and the men are all in black tie, and it's all very swish and lovely with Jason Alan Sway singing at the reception. I know all the ladies love him. and my normal band for dancing. But the next thing is to sell all the tickets, which is not normally a big deal, but I look for sponsors for raffle prizes to try and get some really nice raffle prizes, encourage people to spend some money.
I couldn't believe those. I mean, I went to
you did come last time.
The event Yeah, which was, I was going to say last year, but of course it wasn't last year.
No, it wasn't. It was 2018.
And I couldn't believe how long the raffle actually went on for. I mean, you know, you buy raffle tickets and you kind of, you maybe expect a 1 in 100 chance of winning something. I'm pretty sure that everybody came away with something that evening, and then it was going round again. And there were people that needed kind of, you know, packaging kind of to get all their stuff home on the night. It was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, have you got a spare bag? Because I've just picked up a toaster, you know.
And there was cuddly toys.
And a set of Vol. I think I won a Vol beard clipper. Or,
you know, oh, wow.
Yeah, no,
there's usually, I have all sorts of things, hotel stays and all sorts of stuff. But I'd quite like to get some, I try and organise it with local businesses. So everything's about the local business. Everything's about promoting local spend as well. So the restaurants are all local. The hotels are all local. I'd quite like to get some people to sponsor some overnight stays and get the hotel to perhaps jazz it up a little bit with their contribution. And then obviously promote those businesses at the ball, because there's always 130 people there. They're all business people. It's a great networking event as well. You'll know there's usually quite prestigious individuals around. So it's a really
it's very
good...
well supported.
So Martin was allowed in then?
Well, it's only because he brought Debs. Otherwise, I would never let him in.
Okay. Okay. So when is this event then?
It's on the 7th of November.
Right.
And so, like I said, the tickets, I will be releasing them shortly. I've got a waiting list that I keep. Mm-hmm. So because it is pretty well supported. So if anybody's interested in them, they need to email me. And my email details will be on Martin's show.
So when you're looking for sponsorship and also people to actually give raffle prizes, what's the best way to contact you for that?
Email me.
Email you.
Email me. And it's it'll be on the hip. They'll spell my name wrong. It's Jackie, J-A-C-Q-U-I, .offen, O-F-F-E-N, at jjsystems.co.uk. Okay. There's a page devoted to the Gala Dance, it's called, and there's information about the last two. So you'll be able to find it on the website.
And it's at the Canterbury Cathedral Lodge.
Canterbury Cathedral Lodge, who do an amazing job of running an event of that size. Mm. And I have some good guests come along. So I have Mark Lemesmer as my magician.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Mark. He's Mark brilliant. Mark is very talented.
He's a very good friend of the Balls. Mm-hmm. And I have Jason Allen Sway, who's also amazing. The
beautiful
Burst
setting
Band.
Opposite it's a beautiful the cathedral. Setting.
It's on the night before Remembrance Sunday, so it's always very beautifully laid out. And this year we're going to have a bit of a Winter Wonderland theme, so it should be very beautiful. You can't beat a champagne reception up
tickets
there. Tickets
are £75 each.
No, they've gone up this year.
Okay.
What?
£85.
But still going to a fantastic cause.
Yes, it is a wonderful cause.
Well, the last tables of ten. Tables of ten.
For
£85 a head. There's
so
no reduction.
Discount
no
on
discount.
The table for 10. Okay.
No discounts. Uh-huh. Not on my watch. But it's a fantastic promotion opportunity. I have a photographer there, and you know, obviously I put all sorts of media information out there and social media and
It's a fabulous evening. I mean, as I say, I really enjoyed the last one, so I hope I can make the next one as well.
I try not to put out the videos of the business people dancing and doing the fun stuff that they do, but I do keep it for bribery opportunities later on.
The way you work.
There was a very long conga, I seem to remember, at the last one. So,
and the rowing song where they all get on the floor and row. Yes, there was also there's some good bribe material there.
Trying
as well.
To watch ladies hitch up their ball gowns to do the,
It's not quite the impression I wanted to give. I wanted to give the class impression, Martin.
Obviously,
but, you know,
that was later on in the evening.
Yes, it didn't
start out like that. So, Jackie, thank you so much for that. Absolutely fabulous. Thank you for telling us about the wonderful work you do there for the Alzheimer's Society, but also, you know, the reason why you've been so successful as J&J Systems, because ultimately everything is about the customer. And you're not selling kind of commoditized products, which I think a lot of businesses fall into that trap. You know, they think they're in the marketplace for, you know, selling something that ultimately everybody else is selling.
But I'd like to think we're a business with personality, Martin.
Personality.
Yeah.
No, we like that. Fantastic. For now, thank you, Jackie. Do stay with us, because we're going to be talking to James, who does something similar in many respects, but he's very much a Mac specialist, which you don't really cover as J&J. So we're gonna bring James in after this, but we're gonna play some more slightly tenuous tunage.
Another one.
Another one by way of an introduction. So bear with us and we will see you on the other side of this.
If you wander from God's plan, square-shouldered, straight as a die, the righteous truth, he never tell you no lies. But when that old sun go down, he's heading off up the wrong side of town. Eyes sparkle in the red light glow, trouser pockets, he's ready to. The Rotary Club, never unsure of which shoulders he should rub. Scout leader, a pillar of the church, capital punishment, he wants to bring back the budge. Of course he does, cause when that old sun go down, heading off on the wrong side of town, eyes sparkle in the red light glow, trouser pockets, he's ready to go.
What a fabulous song that was.
A bit of madness.
Hey, well done. It was madness and it was Mr. Apples.
Well, that's quite good for you, to be honest.
One of their sort of more recent tunes, but obviously the relevance there is Apple. Yep. And that leads us nicely into our next guest, who is James Stockdale from Fruit Geek.
Good afternoon.
James, welcome to the show. Thank you. Resident Apple Mac specialist. Uh-huh. There's not many of you out there actually who, which is quite surprising, isn't it? And I think, you know, if you are someone that uses Apple technology in your kind of day to day business life, where do you go when it goes wrong or you need some help?
Well, that kind of brings me into the story of how FruitGeek came to exist, because the answer to that is generally for most people, especially if they're small businesses, they go to the Apple store. And that's where I used to work as over part of my career. And while I was working there on a day-to-day basis, I'd have a number of people approach me and say, I'm using this Mac for my business and it's really frustrating that I have to come all the way down to a shopping centre, take a day off work, I have to do this, do that. If it needs to come in for repair, it's going to be here for a week or more. Mm. And I just got thinking that there's a business idea here somewhere.
There's
got to be something in it. So yeah. I'm either very, very smart or very, very stupid. people that know me...
You need both.
Yeah, well, we'll probably tell you it's the latter. But, you know, hey... It seems to be working out at the moment. And like any business, it takes time to gather momentum. But it's the way the business is scaling. I'm hoping it's going to be a good year.
Fantastic. So you took all of that wonderful training that Apple had invested in you. And you said, thanks very much, Mr. Cook. I'm off now.
They got their chunk of flesh out.
Yeah, of course they did. Of course they did. So let's talk about specifically what you do in a business context, because I used to use a Mac, and one of the frustrations that I always had in a kind of business context was it didn't necessarily work like my PC did in, you know, with certain applications. But that isn't necessarily the case today. Is that right?
Yeah, you're pretty much spot on. And the reason is I've had the pleasure of seeing your old Mac.
Yeah.
And so,
oh dear.
My power book. Yeah.
And so without getting techie about it, there was a bit of a watershed when it comes to Macs, and that was when they introduced Intel processors in 2007, I think it was. So everything that was pre 2007, which is your PowerBook,
yeah, 2004 was, that was, I think,
yeah, was running on the G series processors, which are Apple's own processors, and because of that and the other aspects, they were quite difficult to build into to an environment that had PCs and what have you. Mm-hmm. Once Intel chips were,
of course,
in Macs, then that changed, and you know, now you can run Macs, PCs side by side, many people do. But as I've found in my experience, is that a business that tends to run on Macs tends to run on Macs.
Mm-hmm.
There are bigger businesses and it tends to be a department that will run on Macs.
Yeah.
But there's absolutely no reason why they can't run side by side. And it's really down to the business needs and also the individual needs. I mean, there's a whole load of reasons why you might choose a Mac for a...
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And that resonates with me, because when I started off my working life in creative agencies in London, so big ad agencies. And, you know, back then, obviously, the Apple Mac looked very different to what they look like today. But nevertheless, it was still very much the kind of the domain of the art director, for example. Yeah. Nobody else used a Mac other than the creatives in the agency. Everyone else was running a PC, but they were doing design work on a Mac. Mm. But now, I guess, I mean, Jackie will kind of back me up on this. You know, when it comes to kind of an office suite, you know, we have Office 365, which is a cloud-based solution, which runs on Mac or PC equally well. So you haven't necessarily got that kind of clear demarcation of, you know, this is for this and that's for that.
No. And going back over the years, it's generally been the software that's been the Achilles heel for businesses, because they use their own software platforms that designed for their business, and they're generally Windows based. But over the last 10 years, so many more systems are cloud based that it's not as relevant as it was. And because Macs have become more and more popular as a personal computer over the years, more software developers have built for Mac.
Yeah.
So it's kind of all evolved into, like, there is no reason why you wouldn't buy a Mac over a PC.
Yes.
Well, there's very, very few reasons why you choose other than...
Yeah. I guess that's what's happened with Apple, isn't it? It's become, you know, from what was sort of quite a geeky... if you're part, I mean, you use the word geek, so I don't mind using it.
It's true, isn't it? Yeah.
But it has become a sort of a geeky brand. It's emerged from being quite a geeky brand into a mass market brand. And that's kind of very much the space that Apple is in now. It's a, albeit with a kind of premium price tag. It's a mass market brand with a premium price tag, which is why they're the wealthiest company in the world, I guess.
It does, and I know it might sound biased, but it's not for experience, because my career in IT started when I was 19 years old, and I worked in IT support in a completely Windows environment for many years. And I worked for Apple later on in my career, and then thought, you know, there's a business opportunity here, and I've decided to take that path. But there is something to be said about the quality of the product. I'm not just talking in a physical form. The single aspect that sets apart a PC from a Mac, not in a superiority way, just in a factual way, is that the Apple make the software and Apple make the hardware. And because they make both aspects of that, and they don't license either those items out to anyone else, they maintain a level of control and security and user experience that it is unrivaled. Mm. And I find it shocking that considering they've been around since the late 70s and Windows has been around for a similar amount of time, that there is not another brand in the world that has followed suit with this. We will create our operating system to work with our hardware because
as an integrated solution.
Because that's what sets apart Apple.
Mm. Yeah.
There are lots of good hardware manufacturers
out there. That's a good point.
Mm. There are lots of good hardware manufacturers out there, and you can buy a Windows license to go on any of them.
Mm-hmm.
But the success of Windows is built on the fact that it is malleable to all these hardware.
Yeah.
But the downside of that is you then have to build it and make it work within your environment. Mm. So the security and the user experience will sometimes different place.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Apple have kind of unified that. And Apple is really there for people who go, I don't want to bother with all the hassle. I just want to turn it on and use it and get on with it.
Mm.
Now, that starts to fall away when you start to integrate it and scale it into a business.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of where I bring my expertise and my knowledge of Apple kind of together. They merge together to be able to go into businesses that do choose Apple as their predominant desktop and advise them and help them get the most out of it and scale it for their business and make it work.
Mm. So what is, I mean, Jackie, you come in here as well. What is the decision-making process within a business that steers a business down one path or the other? I mean, who makes that decision? And B, you know, what are they kind of evaluating Mac versus more traditional PC on? I mean, what is the mindset there? How does it work in practice?
Generally speaking, I think if I look at our client base, previously Macs were used in predominantly graphic-based businesses. So we have printers, that kind of people and graphic designers who always used Macs because Macs were traditionally used in that manner, desktop publishing, because of their graphical side of it. It was always much better than the Windows machines. From a commercial point of view, I think most small businesses have gone down the PC route mainly because of availability and knowledge. There aren't many Jameses about. So if you have a problem with a Mac, where do you go?
Mm-hmm.
So that they've steered down the commercial route of it being sort of
more mainstream.
Mainstream, and therefore those. If you look how many J&J systems there are, obviously there's only one.
Mm.
But in terms of, you know, there's quite a few of our competitors around even locally, but there aren't many Jameses. You know, he's on my list of people because there aren't many of him.
Yes, yeah. Mm. But, I mean, the mind boggles, doesn't it, really? Because if you think about the sort of the poor, user experience that so many Windows...
It's because they don't have us.
Well, absolutely. No, and you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
But for us kind of mere mortals out there...
Pay the money, Martin, pay the money.
The reality is, I mean, Windows 10, I mean, I've lost track of how many, vital patches it's had since... I mean, I think when it first came out, it just wasn't fit for purpose, was it? I mean,
we didn't install it ourselves. No. Initially, we downgraded everyone to Windows 7 because it was a very stable platform. As an IT provider, we loved it. All of the legacy software worked on it. Larger applications, accounting products, which were not cloud-based, they hadn't actually developed their product to run on Windows 10, so we didn't install it.
Mm.
It's only been in the last couple of years where we've said, well, okay, now it's a stable product, and we can. And they've changed their method of delivering patches as well. It's not quite Patch Tuesday anymore. It's Patch any day, really. But
I could never imagine that, James, with Apple. I could never imagine Apple launching an operating system.
Far from it. I mean, I'm independent, so I can quite happily speak out about Apple as well as I can speak for them. And as far as their operating systems go, the last one that they released is called Catalina.
Mm.
And I'm advising all my business customers at the moment to stay with the last release, which is Mojave. And that's because Catalina doesn't support 32-bit applications. Now, that doesn't mean anything to anyone, to most people, I should say, until they do the update because they want the new sidecar feature so they can use their iPad as a side screen, which they never needed in the first place, and then find out it doesn't support their legacy DJ software for, like, some of my customers, or a graphics package that they installed some years ago, or... an Adobe license that they had and have, but haven't renewed in a few years because they don't want to pay £800 a year for it. Now can't use it,
right?
Yeah. And it's so Apple are not
They're not immune.
They're not immune to it. Mm. But if you're not in that sort of community and you don't use Max, you would never hear about it or care about it. But there are, and this is specifically for businesses as well, is considerations to make before updating your Max to a new operating system. Because it's become the trend these days to release a new operating system every year, and they are involved, they do involve some sort of major update the last couple of years. I won't go into details, but there are some big moves between the operating systems year on year for the last 3 years, that there are considerations you've got to make if you're running your business on Macs, and that is part and parcel of what we do. So, you know,
so it's the same kind of thing, because we have the same issues with people who install software. For example, some products don't support the 32-bit version, the 64-bit version of Office 365, for example. So we have to downgrade them to change them to the 32-bit version. So it's the same sort of issues. It's often working with third-party software that's the issue. Yeah,
so rolling back updates and stuff like that to previous versions and things like
you
that.
You don't even know sometimes, probably, that they're even using, they've forgotten that they use these bits of software.
And that's the whole reason.
Until it doesn't work.
Yeah. And I have dealt with a number of cases where people have said, you know, I'm stuck in a hole, what have I done? And you have to get them out of them. But as a business, that's all very well and good because that's chargeable work. But I would actually much rather be in a position as a as a business and an advisor to other people's businesses for them not to get in that situation in the first place. And that's why I would urge people that are using Max within a business to just talk to us and say, well, you know, what should we be doing? Yeah. What should we be thinking?
Well, in the same way that you know, Jackie is a sort of a very much an integral part of her client's business, you're exactly the same.
Do you have contracts for people to come to you for support like that, for advice that they can speak to all the time?
We do. So I have a network of people like myself and far smarter than myself that know about Apple. You haven't known me for long enough.
30 seconds.
Yeah, 30 seconds. So you should have deducted by now that I'm not that smart.
You look geeky.
Yeah, I can play it off. If I put my glasses on, then I can read that.
He's way smarter than us, by the way.
Oh, nice. I know how to switch it on and off, and that's about it.
So I've got a network of people that I've built up over the last few years and through my time at Apple as well, so I can fall back, because the knowledge base around it is harder to come by than it is for Windows environments, and I don't know everything, and I don't propose to know everything, but it's very important to be able to know where you can go and get answers. But for businesses, I've learned over the last couple of years since I started the business that there are a lot of common factors there, and off of the back of that, we're just starting to roll out some contract and maintenance plans for businesses, so that it's easy for us to say this is what you get, and it's easy for them to understand what they're going to get and what their needs are. And really, it's an opportunity for us to sort of stay close to them as a business. And like Jackie said, custom service and understanding our clients is really paramount to us.
So do you think that is a sort of key inhibiting factor to businesses adopting more Mac-based kind of solutions and technology? Where do I go if it goes wrong, kind of thing? I can't unplug everything and take it to the store at Bluewater.
Oh, well, you'd call Fruit Geek, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well, but do you think that kind of, I mean, there aren't many people like you out there. That's the point I'm making. So
no, there aren't.
Do you think that might be a kind of a key factor in limiting the kind of the take up of an Apple kind of based business solution? I mean, do Apple provide that themselves? Do they provide, or
no,
is it?
No, they don't.
So they don't provide any kind of support on that level.
This is part of my reason for wanting to start the business, is because I had a wider understanding of IT. When I actually worked as a genius, and that was a job title, not a self-given title.
Wow.
When I worked as a genius at Apple, when I went for the interview, I thought, you know, getting a job at Apple is very difficult, and I thought I probably haven't got enough technical knowledge around it. I wasn't that, you know... I wasn't that knowledgeable on Macs at the time. Yeah. They were just...
Weren't confident.
Yeah, and when I actually got the job, I realised that it's like many things. They'll hire you on your personality attributes more so than your technical ability. They put you through all the training that they want you to have. And so a lot of my colleagues had come from other jobs, and I had zero technical understanding and knowledge, but it went through the same training as me. So at the end of it, I was having far more in-depth conversations with customers about their situation than some of my colleagues could. And I realised that in actual fact, there's probably more value in being an independent Apple specialist that can actually talk and understand and know what they're talking about to their customers rather than go to the Apple store and get a sort of one-size-fits-all. We do this, we don't do that.
You're objective and impartial as opposed to somebody that wants to sell you the next, you need to upgrade your machine to the latest gen.
Exactly. Or, and I feel that since I left in 2015, as talking to some of my colleagues I'm still friends with, I find it a little bit disconcerting that Apple as a business seem to be pushing that far more than they did when I was an employee.
So more sales driven.
Because, and I guess I suppose that's to my benefit if I can get that message out there, is we're much more about the longevity of your technology. Mm-hmm. You should traditionally get, there's no reason why you shouldn't get 10 years out of a Mac. Mm. No reason at all. Right. Now, that's not to say it's not going to need some TLC over that time, because it's good quality hardware. Mm-hmm. If you look after it, then
solid state drives are a good example.
But that is a good, that's the best example, because 5 years ago, a solid state drive was so much more expensive comparatively that you just didn't spec it. And especially if you're buying it from Apple, because you're already paying a premium. Mm-hmm. So their SSDs are even a premium on top of that. Mm-hmm. So now you've had a Mac for 5 years, it's getting slow, it's got a mechanical hard drive, they've got shelf life, they wear out, replace it with an SSD, you'll get another 5 years out of it, no question.
Yes.
So, you know, it's much better than going and buying a new one from
it's like with a car, isn't it? Unless you've got it on finance or something ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to put it through a service to make sure that it's going to last a bit longer and, you know, at the end of the day, it's not going to be a massive payment. I think that, you know, it's good to know that they've got somebody to go to that's unbiased, not sales driven, but to get longevity out of the product that they bought a lot and paid a lot of money for.
Don't get us wrong, we're a business, we have to make a profit, and we're an ambitious business. You know, because we've got that niche in the market, I really want to build on my success over the last 2 years. I started with a couple of screwdrivers, and the first repair I ever did as an independent was change a battery on an iPhone. And I've gone from that to having an office that will, I've got a full-time member of staff now. I've got another two people that are part-time. And
I love your time-lapse videos, because this is a sort of another point of difference between you and Jackie, apart from the fact that, you know, your Apple Mac, you also do the physical kind of repairs of machinery as well, don't you? I love watching those. You know, I've just changed I can't remember what you did the other week, but it was quite an involved process where did you replace a screen on something or something? I can't remember what it was.
Possibly.
And you did a time-lapse video of that. And
I'll tell you what I think one I did recently was a graphics card on a 2011 iMac.
Yeah,
they're a notorious failure point on that model, and it's also a bit of a pig of a job, because you have to get take the whole thing apart. Yeah, you have to pretty much take the whole thing apart to get to the graphics card to replace it, and then put it all back together. But that's quite good for a time lapse, because if you do a time lapse and you're only changing a battery, it's not going to be much
it's not much there.
You know? Unless, it's about a second. Yeah.
Unless you slow it down rather than speed it up.
Yeah, yeah. So I do those occasionally, and the people do seem to like them. And on that front, because I've now got some extra resource in the business, that's going to allow me to do a bit more video, and I want to get a bit more involved in doing the video promotion, because people do seem to like it.
Yeah. Well, I remember a good friend of ours, Ben. Ben Leach.
Oh, I know Ben well. Yeah. Yes,
took my laptop apart one day in a pub at a networking meeting to replace a keyboard, and I couldn't believe the number of screws that came out of this laptop. I think it was 35 screws in. He was actually able to. I think he put a new hard drive in for me. Sorry, it was a keyboard. He was able to actually detach the keyboard. You know, from the kind of the physical frame or whatever, 35 screws. And I'm thinking, crikey.
How many did he have left at the end?
Well, no.
He's a friend of mine. So
that's what amazed
me.
There
wouldn't have been any left over.
There weren't.
Knowing Ben.
There weren't. I couldn't believe it. You know, every screw went back in exactly the right place.
I have an Andy in the workshop that does that kind of thing.
Incredible. Yeah. And I was expecting exactly that. There's going to be three or four left on the table, but I can probably live with that. Mm. But if I tried to do that job myself, the whole thing would have gone in the bin and I'd have been looking at a new laptop. And that's the difference, isn't it? You know, you can repair and replace, whereas if I took it to a, you know, maybe if I took it to Apple Direct, A, I wouldn't see it for a couple of weeks, and B, there'd be no guarantee that I'd ever get it back anyway.
No. Mm-hmm. And you do get where I always thought working at Apple, everyone loves Apple and they want to go to the Apple store. But I've actually learned through the running this business that there are a certain amount of people that don't want to take their Mac to the Apple store because they don't like the environment. It's too noisy, it's too many people. They feel that the staff can sometimes be a bit condescending. Yeah. And actually, they like the personal approach that they get from us at Fruity.
I'd imagine it can be intimidating.
Well, intimidating is another word.
People make you feel small because, you know, because you don't know anything and they do.
What do you mean you don't know how to use it?
I suppose because when I worked there, I always did my utmost and I naturally try and be as non-technical as I can with people. I'm not a genius. I just happen to have worked in IT for a long time, so I know my stuff around it. If I had my time again, I'd probably do something much more creative because my talents at school were really around anything creative, like art and design, English. Mm. That was things I was good at. So I never intended to go into IT, but I've been doing it for over 20 years now, so that's it. But on a personal level, I really try and align with people's understanding of where they're coming from and look at the issue from their point of view and then look at how we can fix it. Mm. And I think that because I took that approach when I worked there, I didn't appreciate that there are other people that maybe don't do it like that and just go, just give it here. I'll fix it for you and then give it back. And that's what people don't like.
That's what we love about you two guys.
Yep.
You're both like that. You're both sort of from the same mould, I think, when it comes to that. So, and that's what people want. People do business with people at the end of the day. So, you know, we don't want to feel intimidated and we don't want to be made to feel stupid or inadequate. You know,
and also we want to know. You know, we have an interest in something that we use every day that's an integral part of our business. So a little bit of understanding.
We want to learn.
Goes a long way.
James, for now, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
How can people get in touch with you with a technical Mac issue or a business that wants some support or is thinking about migrating to a Mac platform?
Well, this is very uncharacteristically non-technical, but they can phone us.
We've got a phone.
Wow.
An iPhone, of course.
Yeah. So they can phone us, but they can find the number along with other information at fruitgeek.co.uk.
And you're on the Twitter at fruitgeekuk, I think.
And likewise, we've got Facebook page, fruitgeekuk, and even Instagram.
Fabulous.
We've got fruitgeekuk.
So keep a lookout for James's time-lapse videos. Tracy, we're going to have to call it a day there. Yeah. We have run out of time. We will be back in 2 weeks' time for another show, and we'll talk about your event then if we can. But for now, thank you so much for joining us. Jackie Offen, JJ Systems, James Stockdale, Fruit Geek, and the wonderful Tracy Westall from Pecunia. And we'll be back with you in a couple of weeks' time. Thank you.
See you then.
Bye.
Bye.